Blog Talk Radio.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone.
That was interesting. The opening credit music seemed to play at various speeds. I'm interested in hearing whether that translates to the recording. So we're going to be a little bit on our toes now, I think. But at least we're in a good mood because it is 7:31 p.m. Pacific on October 26th, and the Los Angeles Kings are 8-1-1. We just finished watching the Kings beat the Canadiens 4-0. Out in Montreal, which doesn't always go very well for them. So, exciting times in LA. We have a lot to talk about, even though it's less than a week since our last podcast. I think we're going to cover some new ground and also catch you up if you missed any of the last week's action. So, today I am going to be joined by Sarah and James, the second James, to join us on the Jewels from the Crown Jewelcast. But for now, I think we just have Sarah on, and I think James will be calling in a bit. So, Sarah, how are you?
I am not too bad. I feel like we're living in an alternate universe where the Kings have remembered how to score goals. Like,
unusual.
It doesn't feel real. I kind of feel like I'm watching some other team that they just stuffed into Kings jerseys, but I'm not going to question it. Like, it can just keep happening. That's fine.
And it's the strangest thing when you see the Kings give up 16 shots or whatever it was in the first period and be leading 2-0 despite only getting 8 of their own. And granted, tonight's game was a little bit of a, you know, Canadian power play fest, and that was the primary reason for the shot differential. But even so, we're used to watching these games go the other way. So it's a good thing, to say the least. And we're going to talk a lot about the way Quick played and has been playing this season, and the goal scorers, who are three very familiar names and one less familiar name. But we'll go ahead and just launch right into talking about this game. Sarah, your impressions after this one?
I mean, I feel like if they were not playing the Canadiens, it could have been a completely different story. But the Canadiens are a team that are just, like, mired in their own drama and issues right now. So once those two Quick goals came in at the end of the first period, like, you could – and, you know, they came out in the second without any real, you know, threat, you know – you just kind of like, well, this game is probably not going to go their way. You know, they're a team that's struggling. There's all sorts of, like, internal drama-y stuff that just surrounds them. And
sure.
It was a good game for the Kings to take advantage of and just beat up on the poor Canadiens. I felt a little bad, but not really. Just, like, 1% bad.
Sure. And it worked out very well for LA to get both of their games with Montreal out of the way when Montreal was in such
yeah.
a rut. And it was quite, not that it's the first time they've done it, but hearing Carey Price get Bronx cheered and booed yet
yeah.
again is something I'm never going to get used to, mostly because most Kings fans have a much stronger undying love for Jonathan Quick than Montreal fans have for Carey Price, which is kind of crazy.
Right? Just unbelievable.
Yeah, I'll never understand it. and on that note, we are going to bring in James, if I can figure out I've only done this 100 times. So James is now off of mute and joining us for his Jewelcast debut. James, how's it going?
Is this working?
This is definitely working.
Ah, this is shocking to me. I did it. I'm so proud of myself.
It's a little victory.
How's it going?
We're in a pretty good mood now. We're dissecting the game that just occurred, and James, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about the last few games in this one because I know you weren't able to catch all of it. But for now, there's not too much else to talk about other than Jonathan Quick and the Canadians are bad, and Carey Price is going to get traded.
It's funny. And hey Sarah, how's it going?
Hey, good.
I just to jump in on it, I caught the review on the way in of tonight's game, and to hear that the Montreal fans are once again Bronx cheering their elite starting goaltender is you just can't make it up.
Yep. And
hey, who knows? Maybe he'll storm off in the third period of a blowout and he'll get traded and go win cups somewhere. That might be familiar to him. I'll never understand Montreal ever.
Yeah. Any Montreal fans that have tuned in for the first time, trying to get a little opposing view of their team, are probably very angry at us right now. So I think we'll go ahead and, rather than dredging up their worst memories, let's go ahead and focus on, first of all, the opposing goalie tonight, who was, of course, Quick in his 500th game. They were saying on the post-game Fox Sports West that Jared Stoll said it was the best game he's seen Quick play since Game 3 of the 2014 Stanley Cup Finals. Patrick O'Neill brought up that 51-save game he had on the road in Detroit a few years back. But, Sarah, I mean, can you compare this to the other games you've seen Quick in, or is this just sort of emblematic of the way he started the season?
He was phenomenal tonight. Like, I was looking at, some of the stats for tonight, and, the Canadians, high-danger chances, just had a million of them. Like, the Kings had, four total the whole game, and the Canadians had 11, according to our good friends at Natural Stat Trick, just in the first period. Like, they, a lot of the shots didn't look super threatening, but he's also Jonathan Quick, and he makes a lot of things look maybe easier than it really was. But if he weren't in net, this could have been a completely different game, because there were a lot of times where, the Canadians got very close or hit the crossbar or he just tipped it wide or whatever. He's looked solid since game one. I joked in the comments on the blog, did we replace him with a cyborg? He's completely zoned in, and, everyone keeps saying, his numbers are going to come back down to earth. He's not going to sustain this, career-wise. That's just not the goalie that he is, but I'm going to take it as long as we have it because he looks great right now.
Yeah. James, do you think that he's going to sustain what he's doing? I mean, we have a lot of history to go off of, but are you buying an improved Quick this season?
I think he'll come back to earth relative. I mean, the numbers are the numbers. But I do think, like Sarah was saying, he definitely seems, he seems healthy. I think one thing I've really been really impressed with is we haven't seen frantic Quick this season so much. I don't know if that's if maybe I'm just making that up because the team is playing so well, but I haven't gotten a sense of him, that going over pursuing side to side, over challenging shooters, which he is sometimes want to do. So to me, that's really, really encouraging. And I think really most encouraging for me has been that given the new youngish, pieces on defense, Fantenberg, you know, the new guys back there, that he seems to be trusting that group really well. And I think that's really encouraging. So while he may not keep up this pace, you know, all signs are pointing to, you know, a pretty solid season from Quick.
Yeah, and Quick, his last four seasons in terms of save percentage, and granted last season was a very short one, he put up a 915, 918, 918, 917 save percentage. So that's the consistent Quick, I guess. But if we're looking for a better form of Quick, we've got 944 save percentage form so far this season, which is only 0.02 of a point below his 2012 playoff save percentage. So we're getting the best Quick that we've seen in a while. And it's tonight especially. I've been noticing some good shot blocking on the penalty kill from the defensemen. Muzzin and Martinez and Doughty have been getting a lot of compliments on the broadcast and have been making some decent plays. But Quick definitely was carrying more of the load tonight. Sarah, other than Quick's performance, what stuck out to you tonight?
I mean, I feel like one of the things I've noticed is just no one's giving up on plays. And, you know, watching through all of the slog of last season, especially once it became fairly clear that the playoffs were not in the cards, like, You could tell that people's hearts weren't in it. Like, they're never going to admit that. But, you know, it really seems like, and I think you guys talked about this on the last podcast too, like, everyone's really bought in to what the team's doing. Everyone's meshing well. I noticed a little bit in the game, like, John Stevens was mixing up some of the defensive pairings, and it was seamless. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes that turns into a disaster when someone decides to tinker with that, but it's like, oh, Curtis McDermott is with Drew Doughty right now. Okay, fine. And it worked, and they made it work. So it's just been a lot of fun to watch them play, like, playing with their hearts out. Like, you know, they're in on whatever changes have happened in that locker room, whatever changes have happened system-wise. Like, everyone's on the same page for the first time in ages, I think.
Yeah. I think.
Agreed.
Go ahead, James.
Oh, I was just going to say it's, you know, it's, I don't want to take it in a different direction, but, you know, obviously with all the concern over the summer, and it was a pretty big debate over, you know, the firing of Lombardi and Sutter, and, you know, was it a mistake? Was it the right move? And at least in the short term, it just seems like there's an energy there. And young guys are getting opportunities, and veterans are welcoming the opportunities that those younger players are getting. And things seem to be really heading in the right direction.
Yeah, and you can talk about circumstances maybe forcing Stevens' hand on a few things. Maybe Iofalo doesn't get a chance to play with Kopitar and Brown if Gaberick is healthy to start the season.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
If the AHL squad isn't in Ontario, Stevens doesn't get a chance to rotate in a couple of guys that he managed to give chances, or maybe he doesn't go from Brodzinski to Auger to Amadio. But he at least has made some great moves in terms of, it seems like the defensive utilization, which we'll talk about later in the podcast, has been working quite well for them. Iofalo has been great. McDermott and Fantenberg have played quite well in their limited dosages, and he's already getting Jack Adams talk, which maybe shouldn't be too much of a surprise, but he's got the system working reasonably well. Tonight was a little, you know, a little more lopsided than the Kings would have liked, but overall at even strength, they're still pretty similar to the Sutter team in terms of the balance of shots. It's just that it seems like they're giving up a few more, but they're getting a few more. And so far that strategy has worked pretty well for them. And with Adrian Kempe too, that's been the big story, especially since our last podcast when he had just gotten a hat trick and we weren't sure it was a great game. We weren't sure if that was going to be what we would see from Kempe. And let's talk about him. So, James, are you happy with, I guess, you're probably happy with Kempe's play, but What are you seeing from him that you're encouraged by?
I'm legitimately blown away by, and you know, I shouldn't be, because you know I caught some of his play in Ontario, but I'm sure. Stunned by the edge that he plays with, and his willingness to go into the kind of the ugly corners, if you will, and to battle. And it really seems like, you know, I was afraid that, you know, obviously he has speed, he has skill. I didn't think that he'd this quickly turn into the type of player who's willing to move off of the perimeter and get into the corners and go to the front of the net. I'm really, really impressed with his play.
Sarah, what do you have to add to that, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, I the first couple of games of the season, and you know, he's playing in that center role, and you know, in the back of my mind, I had a post half written in my head about like, what's wrong with the third line? Is it Adrian Kempe? And I was like starting to get kind of concerned, because he's all of our top prospect. Like, I ranked him number one on my top prospect listing. He came out number one overall, you know, once we tabulated all the votes. He's our top prospect for a reason, and it just looked like, you know, he was having a hard time kind of putting it together, and then it seems like all of a sudden things just clicked. You know, and whether he was playing, you know, up with, you know, Toffoli and Pearson, or no matter who he's on the ice with, it seems like something has just clicked for him in how he's playing. And one thing I noticed tonight was just the kind of knock on him is sort of, oh, he might be fast and score some goals, but his defense is just going to be terrible. And, you know, you're going to put him out there with Toffoli and Pearson, and, like, they might get scored on a bunch of times because no one's really there to be defensively responsible. But there were, in my notes that I was taking for writing tonight's recap, like, there were a ton of times where I noticed, you know, he was the one disrupting a play, or he got in there with his stick to, you know, knock the puck away from someone on the Canadiens. Like, he definitely exceeded my expectations, not just, you know, in offense, but in terms of, you know, being that defensively aware center that they need to be in the system. Definitely, you know, whenever he scored that one goal in the other Montreal game where it just looked like, you know, Jeff Carter had possessed Adrian Kempe for a minute to score this goal, you know, and people had been kind of speculating that, like, you know, the Kings kind of want to mold Kempe after, you know, the same sort of Jeff Carter, like, physical center, but still use your, you know, your speed and your hands to make goals. And, you know, I kind of said on the Twitter about, like, you know, if that's what they're hoping for, this might be a sign that he can do it. And there were a couple people who were like, okay, it's just one goal. But, yes, true. However, like, he hasn't done anything to kind of change my perspective that if that's the player they want him to be, like, he might actually be able to do that.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, at this point, it's easy to be really high on Kempe given the way pucks have been going in the net with him out there. And I don't think anybody is maybe arguing that he's a finished product. There's clearly some work to do in terms of discipline. He's still, after 10 games so far, his Corsi 4 percentage is at 45%, I think. So he's not playing as effective as a possession game as maybe he's capable of, and as well as he did in that respect last year. But it's hard to argue with the results, and it's hard to argue with the spark and the jump. And tonight, you know, that might have been his first deflection goal of the season. Scoring a different way than he has so far, but it's nice to see, especially on the third line, which is not somewhere that the Kings have gotten, you know, a whole lot of offensive spark from in the past.
I'm gonna ignore your citation of his Corsi percentage, and we're just gonna go with the idea that he's dominating on both ends of the ice.
No, I love
and
it.
That
I love
he
it.
Is Jeff Carter 2.0. All right, let's not bring those numbers in here right now.
I just want to be careful about cherry picking statistics, but you know what? With Adrian Kempe, our 21-year-old savior, let's cherry pick all we want.
Let us have this moment. We haven't had one of those in a long time.
Right. I'm sorry. The next 40 minutes are going to be so positive, I promise. spiraling out of control. So Kempe is not the only story so far. And you know what? With Toffoli and Pearson, who have been so effective from a possession standpoint, maybe without getting those results, hey, this might be a moot point soon enough. But tonight, the other goals came from Toffoli and Kopitar, and of course, Curtis McDermott, who threw a seeing-eye shot off a Montreal stick and passed Carey Price for a truly breathtaking goal. We'll talk about McDermott a little bit later because I want to talk about that play and about the young defensemen and the young forwards as a whole. But Toffoli, we haven't talked as much about him after his, I think, 13 goals last season. He was off to not a bad start, but maybe a less productive start than people were looking for. James, on the Toffoli front, do you think that putting him with Kempe is going to be beneficial in the long run, or do you think it's just a situation of he needs to find his game before worrying about who he's with?
You know, I've been real encouraged with his play. I didn't watch the game tonight. I'm watching highlights of the goals, and you know, his goal tonight was kind of the type of Tyler Toffoli goal that you're used to seeing. You know, turn over on the half forward, step in, and just, you know, laser a shot that not too many players in this league are going to be able to put it where he put it. And, you know, I mean, I think at this time, you know, like you said, I'm not sure if Kempe is going to get Toffoli where he needs. I think Toffoli's turning into the type of player where he's going to be raising the game of players around him. I really think last year was kind of a fluke season for him. It was a down year for everybody and him especially. And I think a lot like Kopitar, there was no bounces for him last year. You know, I think he probably deserved at least 6 to 7 more goals if things tilted his way a little bit more. And I've just been impressed with his play defensively on the half boards and really through the neutral zone, where last year it seemed like once things started going bad for him, he was pressing a bit along with the rest of the team. And I think, you know, it's, you know, a rising tide raises all boats, and he really seems to be, he seems to be enjoying the game a bit more. And, you know, that's by no way analytical or whatever you want to call it, but he certainly seems to have kind of found his step again this year.
Yeah, and Stevens is taking an interesting approach, I think, with Toffoli and with Pearson to a lesser extent, where Toffoli is playing a shade under 16 minutes a game so far on average this season, and that would be his lowest since 2014-15, which was, I think, his second full season. And maybe this points to the way Stevens has leaned on Kopitar and Brown, and maybe it's a little bit less PK time, but Toffoli and Pearson are sort of being given a chance to, again, find their games a little bit, and now that they are seem to be playing really well, Stevens isn't trying to throw them into really difficult situations. He isn't trying to, you know, force a goal out of either of them. It seems like he's just giving them opportunities to succeed. Sarah, with Toffoli and, I guess, with Pearson, because we haven't really raised the topic of Tanner Pearson yet, are you looking for more usage out of them? Are you looking for different usage, or do you think that Stevens is taking the right approach?
You know, from the perspective of my fantasy hockey team that has Tanner Pearson on it, I'd like to see him be used a little more, because right now I'm like, do I need to drop him and add Adrian Kempe instead? But I do think that it's a smart approach, and, you know, just looking at the ice time from tonight, you know, aside from Kopitar, like, no one really stands out as having gotten, you know, a disproportionately large amount of ice time. Like, the middle lines were all kind of fairly balanced. Poor Nick Dowd occasionally gets to step on the ice, sort of. I think that, you know, last year, you know, maybe they rushed Toffoli back a little bit from the injury that he had, you know, hoping that maybe he could help score more goals to push the team to the playoffs, you know. So I kind of wondered last year, like, was he really ready to come back? Because he certainly didn't look kind of the same player after he came back from injury. But I think they both also benefited from, like, whatever magic happened last year with Jeff Carter. Both of them skating alongside him certainly benefited from the, you know, at least career year as far as his time with the Kings. You know, it certainly helped them out. I'd like to see a little more of them, but, you know, it's not, like, glaring. Like, they're not playing 8 minutes of ice time. Like, I think they can still be very effective in the, you know, 15 to 16 minutes that they're getting, and then hopefully, you know, also help manage their minutes better for later in the year, keep them fresh for, you know, when we, I don't know, get back to the playoffs.
Hey, that's a goal. I think we can do it. Yeah, it's the little things that we root for. So yeah, I'm browsing the ice time now, and there's our interesting ones sticking out. Like you said, Kopitar played 20 and a half minutes. The next three most used, Dustin Brown, again, the second most used, but this time only 1758, which for him has actually been low. Trevor Lewis playing 1747, and fourth among forwards in overall ice time was Brooks Like, who played 17 minutes tonight. And that
Dear
was
God.
primarily due to 4 minutes and 15 seconds of penalty kill time. James, you had a reaction to the Brooks-like usage and the Brooks-like experiment. And we kind of forgot to talk about him a week ago, I think, because we weren't expecting him to play 17 minutes a night. So, James, thoughts on Brooks-like?
You know, it's totally unfair of me. Completely unfair of me. Because I think clearly he's very well liked by the guys on the team. He's clearly well liked in the front office. I think it's just it's a totally unfair hangover from me of mine, I should say, from, you know, kind of Daryl Sutter's penchant for hanging on, putting guys in the lineup and giving a lot of ice time to guys who, you know, their play on the ice may not have, in my view anyway, earned them the amount of ice time that they were getting. So it's no comment. And, you know, one thing about Like is he's responsible. You know, he's not going to be, you know, an Andreyev who, you know, you give him 10 minutes of ice time and he's going to cost you 4 minutes in penalties. But yet Sutter would just keep rolling him out. So, you know, you're not going to find that. I haven't. You know, his play so far has been strong. It's just for that type of player. And again, granted, they seem to be in control tonight pretty heavily. So, you know, he's probably stretching the legs a bit more than he would. But once that number starts creeping up above 12 minutes, 13 minutes, I'm probably going to get a little nervous if this continues.
Sure. And because I called out a random Corsi number for Adrian Kempe, I'm going to do it for Brooks Like, too. So far,
great.
Good solid 50%. No, it's an even 50. He has been
That's
on the ice
enough.
For 31 shot attempts, for and against.
If you had given me an over-under of 50, I probably would have gone over. So.
No, he's doing great. He's he's got even splits on his face-offs too. So he's not starting a bunch in the offensive zone or the defensive zone. He's being given fairly average minutes, and he's putting forth fairly average results, which I guess you could do worse for someone who played pretty much as a Toronto Marlies last year and didn't play all that well there either.
You know what the numbers that you decided that if this was last year, he would have been on Kopitar's left wing.
Oh, don't even say that.
Oh, it's true. It's completely true.
He would have been first line Brooks like, and I would have been like crying in my bathroom.
Yeah. We've got top line Trevor Lewis. Bottom line Brooks like actually is the same alliteration, so maybe we should keep rolling with that.
Bottom line Brooks like. I can live with bottom line Brooks like.
Yeah.
You know what? It's encouraging, and the Kings have 17 points through 20 games, so we're gonna be optimistic about that too. Before we get to talking about some of the other players, I do want to talk about the other games from earlier this week. So let's start with the back-to-back with Toronto and with Ottawa. Toronto and Ottawa, two very, very different games, both one-goal games, one as being a 3-2 loss and the other being a 3-2 win. And the Kings are... they went into that at a bit of a disadvantage. They had flown up from Columbus after a wild game against the Blue Jackets and came in and held their own against Toronto, who's, a really dangerous team. And then in Ottawa, they finally started showing a whole lot of tiredness towards the end of that one and managed to steal 2 points. James, I know you saw those games. What did you sort of come away with after that back-to-back?
The number one thing I came away with was I thought, and again, I think it's probably a holdover from last year. I thought the Kings were going to get run out of the building in Toronto, and I was quite impressed with how they matched up with the Maple Leafs. It's funny thinking that, here I'm looking at the Maple Leafs as a test for the Kings when, all the talk before that game from Mike Babcock was the Kings being a test for the Maple Leafs. I was very impressed with the way they played that game. I think they probably deserve better in terms of the score. The shots were 38-34. I think the Maple Leafs, I can't recall in terms of who had possession more in the game, but I was really impressed with that. And I was resigned to a far worse outcome in Ottawa, obviously. Mm-hmm. And for them to they could have very easily have kind of given up there towards the end of that game, I think, and they didn't, and that was really impressive. So, Sarah, what did you think? I'm kind of interested in were you jumping off the couch, because I was freaking out in that Ottawa game at the end there.
Yeah, I mean, it was really like they were very diametrically opposed games. The Toronto game, I was driving, so I was listening to it on the radio, and Trevor Lewis scored that shorthanded goal, and I was just like shouting in my car at myself, but even when I was doing my game preview, I was like, this game is going to be a good test for them, because they, struggled against the Blue Jackets in that like ridiculous, they were like 10 goals in the first period or something. Toronto's a similar-ish team. Yeah, something like that. Who needs numbers? Toronto's very fast, very skilled, lots of young guys who are, they're all out to prove themselves as a contender. I felt like that, despite the fact that that game was a loss, it wasn't a bad game. And it wasn't a game, but even by the end, in like the last couple minutes, I was like, I don't know, maybe they can still pull it off. And then the Ottawa game, I'm watching it, and I feel like several of us expressed this on Twitter, I thought it was just going to be a 2-0 game and the Kings were going to lose again and we were going to have to start talking about, have they forgotten how to put the puck in the net or something.
Sure.
But they they fixed it. They, you know, they've managed to undo it. But, you know, it's been interesting watching these games and not having that overwhelming feeling of, well, we got behind, the game is over, I might as well go do something else now. It's really fun watching them and thinking, well, they're behind, but they might, there's, you know, still 40 minutes left and they can pull it off. Which is, you know, why that Ottawa game was kind of such a roller coaster. Because I was kind of thinking both things at once, like they can pull it off, but I don't know. So it was definitely good to see them all kind of get that game out.
Yeah. And I was, first of all, I was impressed that Jim Fox, about 15 seconds before Adrian Kempe tied the game against Ottawa, pointed out that the Kings had gotten their last scoring chance off a dump-in and said, the Kings just need to start dumping it in. And Tyler Toffoli, who on that night had more dump-ins than anybody else, was the guy who ended up with the puck, put it behind the net. Fox and Alex Faust have been in fine form so far, so that's fun. But aside from that, I think I think the Leafs game was really interesting because, like you, James, I thought it was a huge test. If anybody thought the Kings hadn't proven themselves, at least proven that they were pretty decent after that Columbus game, that was a good chance to put them up against a really tough opponent. And the Senators, I was much more willing to chalk up to being a third game in four, and even tonight when they got pinned a little bit, I'm willing to do the same. But I, before this road trip started on the last podcast, I said that if you offered me three wins of these six games, I'd take it. And so far they've got 3-4, and they've got a chance against either Boston or St. Louis to even surpass that one. And even in Toronto, you know, you'd have expected them to be carried by Kopitar and Brown going in. The Kings' star of that game and the third star overall was Trevor Lewis. So it was nice that they got contributions from a little further down the lineup. James, we've talked about the offense quite a bit. What have been your thoughts on the defensemen over the past week? Specifically, your Doughty, Martinez, and Muzzin sort of three-headed monster.
I'm loving Steven's approach to allowing them a bit more freedom to jump into the play. I think it's making an enormous difference. I think more than anything, it seemed to me, especially in the middle 30 games last season, that one of the Kings' real struggles was their inability, which had been their hallmark since at least 2011, to really quickly get the puck out of their zone and through the neutral zone, whether it leads to a dump in or a carry in. And I think the quick passes from each of those players that you mentioned, from Doughty, Muzzin, Martinez, they're all moving with a bit of quickness in their step. And I really like the new emphasis on not just getting the puck up, but getting the puck up and then moving with it and looking to receive a pass. And I think that's been a big piece of kind of the jump in offense. Because I just think they're getting the puck out of their zone and into the opponent's zone more quickly once again.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting approach that, you know, the Kings' younger guys are clearly sort of trying to adapt to. I know that Christian Follin, who's been benched the last couple games, had a play, I think, two games ago, the last game he played, where he left basically Muzzin and Camilleri defending, Muzzin defending a 2-on-1 and Camilleri being the next guy back, because he was sort of forced up the ice and looking to make a play. So it's a big balance, and I think that's something that Martinez in particular, I think it suits his game well. Doughty obviously sort of has that catch-up ability and showcases it, but Martinez has been pretty good at that too. And Muzzin, who we had a nice little debate about on last week's podcast, has at least been able to avoid being either forced into that situation or we haven't seen a puck end up in the net with him in that situation in at least a few games. Sarah, your thoughts on those three?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've all been very impressive. You know, the fact that Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez are kind of bouncing back from what was a pretty dreadful year for both of them last year, and that they've, you know, been able to come back and say, like, no, we're still, you know, defensive pairing, and look, we got it. We've got it figured back out again. Has been good to see. I haven't had a lot of plays where they've both been on the ice where I've been like, oh, no, oh, that's bad. And there were definitely a lot of times last year where I was like, what if I just don't watch? and, you know,
sounds about right.
That, you know, John Stevens has talked about, you know, kind of monitoring all of their ice time, which I know that, you know, Drew Doughty especially is probably not super pumped about because he's in that same category of, you know, the Duncan Keiths and, you know, those of the, you know, defensemen, the Erik Karlssons of guys who want to be playing, like, as long as you physically will put them on the ice. And, you know, tonight he played something like just under 23 minutes. You know, in the overtime game, he played, like, closer to 30, but that, you know, he was probably out for a significant part of the overtime period, you know.
Yeah.
The more they can do to not burn him out so early in the season, especially with these games that, you know, were winning fairly convincingly, you know, I feel like if you look back at his numbers from early in the season last year, he was probably playing, you know, 28, 29 minutes a game when he didn't need to be. You know, it's October, it's November, like, let's chill. So it's been good to just to see their usage. Like, no one really stands out as the guy who's on the ice all the time. You know, McDermott's kind of put his game together a little more and, you know, is getting more playing time because of that. And so the top guys don't have to work so hard to make up for him being benched. So I've been fairly impressed by what I've seen from all of them.
Yeah, and Muzzin and Martinez each played 5.5 minutes on the penalty kill and about 23.5 minutes overall of ice time. Doughty played just under 23, like you said. So the balance has been working. Muzzin has 9 points in 10 games, which I didn't even realize until I looked it up just now. And it's been a quiet 9 points in 10 games for a defenseman especially. And Muzzin and Martinez blocked 10 combined shots tonight.
Yeah, Muzzin, it's funny with Muzzin. There's that old adage for NHL defensemen, you know, it's old and probably old for a reason, but you know, if you're not noticing them, their names not being called, they're probably doing a good thing. And it seems like with Muzzin, that applies very, very well. Because, like you said, I didn't realize 9 points in 10 games, go figure. But, you know, if he's avoiding those the odd Muzzin moment, then, you know, it's probably a really good sign for his play.
Yeah, and it's one of many things that I think has been working a lot better for the Kings than we anticipated at the start of the year, especially that, you know, you're putting those three guys out there. And Derek Forbert is, he's getting over 20 minutes a game. He's only playing 2 or 3 minutes on any given night, fewer than most of those guys. But, they're like, Stevens is clearly leaning on those top four. He's, you know, if you can get good health and good production from that top four, then that makes it a lot easier to go between Oscar Fantenberg and Christian Follin and Curtis McDermott and whoever's waiting in Ontario. So a positive aspect, I think, that can kind of get lost in the offensive jump from the Kings. Now, speaking of that offensive jump, we are going to talk about Kopitar and Brown again because it's kind of impossible not to, and because they have been playing so much. So Kopitar tonight, that wrist shot that he scored on, that was, do I suspect? No, he had 3 shots on goal tonight. So he's shooting about 25-30% for the season. Not going to continue, but he's clearly
how dare
more.
You?
I know, but he's shooting the puck more. So I am going to say that even if he does drop off, you're still going to see goals from him. Now, Sarah, do you think this is a symptom of Carter being out of the lineup, or is it more of a philosophical change, do you think?
I think it's more philosophical, you know, because he was doing the same thing, you know, in the first, you know, however many games before Jeff Carter got injured. You know, Kopitar came out firing at the start of the season. And, you know, him and Dustin Brown together, just they look like, you know, vintage Kopitar and Brown. They look like they're having fun. They look like they're clicking. They, you know, they have a good, you know, he has not yet been rewarded on the score sheet, but they have a good, responsible winger in poor goalless Alex Iafallo. Whether or not they're going to sustain this the whole year, who knows? But I think that it's been really great to see. Just, you know, when he's out there, I'm not like, oh, well, no one's going to get scored on, but we're also not going to score a goal. Like, now every time he's going something, I'm like, he looks dangerous with the puck. It's not something that I think is really going to, you know, change even as his scoring percentage and everything goes down because of numbers and how math works.
James, you got any Kopitar feelings at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I take a lot of credit for it. I've been, you know, shouting, shoot, for years. And, you know, I feel like he finally heard me, you know, from the 300s, you know, as he crossed the red line and I started shouting, shoot. But, you know, I think, yes, he's shooting more. And I mean, help me out. Do you guys remember someone who was just seemingly more snake bit than Kopitar last year? I can't recall. I think he must have hit upwards of 10 to 15 posts.
Oh,
I mean,
it was to the point where it was like comical.
It was brutal. And so I don't, you know, I think certainly it seems like he's got a, you know, shooting a bit more frequently. And he's getting breaks, and it's good to see. And you know, Sarah, like you said, I'm just dying for Iafallo to get his first goal. It's going to come. I'm quite pleased that Stevens, you know, is obviously recognizing his strong play with the puck and off the puck, because he's keeping him there. And you know, that line is clicking, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's certainly more than I think anybody expected from Iafallo this early on. And with, you know, McDermott, I'm still stunned that McDermott managed to score a goal before Iafallo, but the Kings have got to be pleased.
I think he's stunned, too.
Yeah. Actually, I watched the highlight of that tonight. And go back, it's worth another look on NHL.com, because I'm not sure who was more excited, if it was McDermott or Doughty. But it's classic Doughty. He's just absolutely freaking out about McDermott scoring. It's quite cute, I have to say.
Yeah, and you're not going to see the full 4-minute montage of Fox Sports West repeatedly cutting back to McDermott on the bench and McDermott still grinning ear to ear. But it was a nice moment. It was a very nice moment.
After the game, Sarah. I had a lot of friends who are non-Kings fans but follow me on Twitter anyway, messaging me being like, "Who was that kid? Like, why he's so happy?" I'm like, "I know." So a lot of people definitely noticed, even if they don't know who he is or have much love for this team, they certainly noticed a real happy kid getting his first goal.
Yeah, and I didn't uphold my end of the bargain by running the joke into the ground, but if he does score again, I am going to start calling him Curtis McDavid, and you cannot stop me.
Green light. they used to be teammates, so...
Yeah, McDermott yeah. Not- I have very legitimate reasons behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you, Sarah, you're lucky.
Make it happen.
All right. I'm going to. You can't stop me. Sarah, you're very lucky. We're only at about 10 minutes left. I don't think we're going to have time to talk a lot about baseball on this podcast.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame. So we are going to talk about a couple more things, though, and one of them with IF follow-up. James, you tweeted out a link to Elliot Friedman's 31 thoughts earlier, I think, this week. And there were some interesting notes, one of them being that IF follows the Kings' final two competitors for IFL were Buffalo and Minnesota, but also the Oscar Fantenberg story. Do you want to share that one?
Yeah. Yeah. For people who haven't seen it, Elliot Friedman's most recent 30 thoughts, he brought up the story of how Oscar Fantenberg, you know, is a free agent signed him from Sweden. And they brought him over, and apparently they were looking to hide him so that other teams wouldn't know that they had brought him over. And obviously, probably it's like anything, who's that? Let's check him out. If the Kings like him, we should look at him too. But apparently they seated him near or close to Bob Miller. And so then when the camera panned to Bob Miller, you know, anyone who was following the game from other teams was looking at, hey, who's that guy? Who's that kid sitting next to Miller? And I'm looking at the column now, and the Friedman's quote is, as other NHL clubs vultured in, the Kings were able to hold on and sign him. So I would have loved to have heard who those other clubs vulturing in were and how that went about, but I got a laugh out of that.
Yeah, and I know there were other free agent defenders out there. I know Will Butcher signed with New Jersey and got off to a really quick start this season. I know Colorado was looking at Butcher. So there were clearly other teams that were looking for defensive help. And I mean, I don't want to think about where the Kings would be without Iafallo and without Fantenberg. They'd probably be off to a decent start, but those guys have both fit in pretty seamlessly. The other story I thought was interesting from that column was about Pierre Turgeon, the quote-unquote offensive coordinator for the Kings, and sort of things that he worked on with the various Kings, mentioning that Iafallo's release point was a focus,
yeah.
Sort of changing the release point, something that Jeff Carter, for example, was an expert at, talking about changing Tanner Pearson's one-timer. And it's interesting. I mean, especially for someone like me who doesn't watch game tape and doesn't pick out, you know, those small subtle changes without a whole lot of attention to it. It's interesting to hear the impact that a guy like Turgeon has, and it makes sense when you see, you know, Jarrett Stoll skating at practice with the Kings, or even someone like Brooks Like, who's been around the block. Sarah, with regards to the offensive impact that maybe a Turgeon has had, or that sort of these other new staff members have had, are you? I guess I don't know if I have a question, but what do you think about sort of the offensive changes for the Kings?
You know, I thought that whole anecdote about, you know, how he kind of worked with guys on, you know, changing, you know, the angle that they released the puck at and stuff was really interesting, because it is a little bit of a insight into how things work and, you know, just the little tweaks that someone can make that can change their entire game. Yeah, I thought that was interesting because, you know, they haven't necessarily had someone whose sole focus has been on that. And, you know, whether or not the statistics are going to bear out that the Kings are a different team, you know, as people start looking at, you know, things like zone entries and puck movement and stuff like that, you know, it may turn out that numbers-wise it's not significantly different. But, yeah, I feel like all the shakeups that they've done to kind of put the focus back on, you know, move the puck around, take shots on net, you know, stop shooting directly at the goalie's chest, which I feel like was, you know, the Kings might put 45 shots on goal last year, but, you know, if 30 of them are going right into the logo on the guy's chest, like, is that really, you know, a meaningful shot? Not really. I feel like they're taking a lot more shots that, could turn into something meaningful instead of just let's whip the puck at the dude and see what happens. And I think that a lot of that has to come out of, you know, just the way that they're freeing them up to play a different offensive game, and they're, you know, letting them work on, you know, shooting the puck and doing that sort of stuff. I mentioned it in my preview, but, you know, John Stevens was saying the same thing about Trevor Lewis and how, you know, Trevor Lewis throughout his career here has been asked to be a checking player. That's what he does. Like, we make fun of him because he scores empty net goals and that's about it. But, you know, John Stevens was basically saying, like, you know, Trevor was a big goal scorer in juniors. We know that he can be that guy. Like, you don't lose that skill, you know, just because, you know, you've gotten older and you're playing a different role. And, you know, freeing Trevor Lewis up to maybe focus more on, you know, yes, still be defensively responsible, but if you have the chance, like, take it. Like, try to create some offense. And, you know, I feel like just having that attitude overall throughout the team has really gone a long way to changing how they play.
Yeah. James, any final thoughts on the offense?
Yeah, on that, you know, in Friedman's column, he also brought up that the Kings are under Turgeon's direction, that the Kings are, as and I'm quoting here, attacking from below the goal line. And that was really interesting to me because, you know, when I think of that, the first team that comes to mind are the San Jose Sharks. And, you know, honestly, for years, the Sharks never scared me on the rush. The Sharks didn't strike me as a particularly dangerous team on the rush. But when you got Pavelski or Thornton below the goal line, I mean, I can't remember the number of goals they've scored with a quick pass from below the goal line and a player moving through the slot or just below the faceoff dot. To hear that, to hear also that, you know, the defensemen are up being more active up the ice without the puck. I think it's interesting. Just we're starting to get answers for, okay, how are the Kings going to produce more offense without a radically different roster? When Turgeon was hired, like everyone, I was like, oh, okay, let's see how this works. I mean, I've never really heard of that before. And, I mean, so far it seems to be paying off.
Yeah, and the hope, of course, is that it continues to pay off because there are only so many times that we could write the Kings' shooting percentage will turn around before I think we stopped believing it.
I think it became it's something we were soothing ourselves with last year. It's like an old girlfriend. Like, no, she'll come back. If I just sit here doing the same thing with my life, she'll come back. It got bad last year. I mean, I was irrational with that, I think.
Oh, sure. And that's where new blood helps, I think. And with Stevens, but also getting to see Kempe and Iafallo doing so well and getting to see Mike Amadio's NHL debut tonight. We'll see whether his style, his more sniper capabilities are going to be a better fit than, you know, the big body of Dustin Auger or the sort of shiftiness of Johnny Brodzinski. We'll see how that turns out. But there's, as always, there's more to watch. We're at the end of our time, so
can I ask you one quick question?
Yeah, you got like 45 seconds.
Easy. Scale of 1 to 10, and I think the Kings' success, maybe this is for another time, but scale of 1 to 10, I think the Kings' success has maybe hidden this player a bit, but how would either of you, 10 being greatest signing ever, 1 being how is he still on the team, how would you rate Michael Camilleri so far?
Sarah, go.
Like 5.5.
Eric.
Solid. I'm gonna give him a 4, but that's like a 7 on the power play and like a 3 at even strength. There's a lot more to come from him, but I think he's got it. I think he just needs to, you know, I think he can play with a better center or maybe one that doesn't take so much away from him in the way Kempe
right.
has, but you know, I think he's got potential.
Right.
Quick, what's your rating? You got 10 seconds.
I'm like you, I'm and Sarah, I'm right around, I'd probably be generous and say a 6. But
six.
It'll be interesting to see. I'm hoping it's just a little bit of trying to find his game and fit in a little bit.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us then. So thanks, everyone, for joining. We'll do another podcast soon enough. Have a good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.